Hello and welcome to the IVC podcast, Veterinary Science on the Move, where we are celebrating our 20th episode this month, and as a result have prepared a particularly interesting and informative podcast this time around. Itchy skin is a nuisance to every species, not just humans, and for our furry friends it is particularly annoying when it is not caused by a simple infection that can be easily treated. Atopic dermatitis, a disease of the skin which is increasingly prevalent and of great clinical importance in dogs, is such a multifactorial disease with no straightforward treatment. In today's episode, Dr. Anke Hengbricks, who is a lecturer in veterinary dermatology at the Royal Veterinary College, will tell us about her experience with atopic dermatitis and the work she is conducting to improve our understanding and the treatment of this disease. Anke, thank you for joining us here today. You're particularly interested in atopic dermatitis, so you're a veterinary dermatologist looking at that disease. Could you give us an idea of what atopic dermatitis looks like in the clinics and what other diseases there are which you would have to exclude before you, for example, would treat a dog for atopic dermatitis?
Yes, of course, certainly. I think one point to make is that there can be quite marked variation, really, in as to how atopic dermatitis shows in the dog with regard to what sort of skin lesions there are and where they are on the dog, the distribution, and how severe they are as well. And also with regard to how important skin infections are to contributing to the problem. So there are some dogs where the disease seems to be very mild and other dogs where it's very marked. In most dogs where the disease is anything more than very mild, these dogs are very itchy. And so self-trauma is frequently associated with the disease. So lesions due to gnawing and licking and scratching and rubbing may then also appear, which aren't really caused by the underlying disease, but just by the dog causing trauma to itself. And the itch, which is a hallmark of this disease, is often significant to the point where it impairs the dog's quality of life, and that's usually when advice is sought for treatment. I guess if you had to define what atopic dermatitis in the dog is, you would sum it up as saying that this is an itchy or pruritic skin disease that is present either chronically, so all the time, or it recurs. So there are some dogs that are all right some time of the year, but the problem recurs later on. And that this disease typically affects multiple areas on the body. For example, the chin, the face, the muzzle, the ear flaps, sometimes the ear canals as well, the interdigital skin, so that's the skin of the paws, the armpits, and the underneath, the underbelly of the dog. And it's important to note that in any single dog, not all of these sites need to be involved, but some of those areas are usually involved. And what does one see on the affected skin? Sometimes, particularly in the early stages of the disease, you may not actually see anything wrong with the skin in those sites at all, but it's the dog that's itchy in those areas, and the dog tries to...
So it's before the dog actually starts to mutilate himself, almost, you know, because of the itchiness. You don't see very much.
You don't see very much because the inflammation is present in the skin, but it's only microscopic, so you wouldn't pick it up with your eye. And the dog may be rubbing these areas, but maybe not enough to really cause a lot of damage. But the owners will notice that that there is excess nibbling and rubbing going on. But usually what tends to happen is that these areas of skin become red as well. So you look at the dog and you'll see red blotches or redness and also hair loss due to the rubbing of those areas. So, you know, what age does this disease usually occur? Well, typically what we see is that the dogs start developing the very first signs sometime between sort of 5-6 months and about 3 years of age. So it is possible for the disease to develop earlier or later, but most of the dogs will fall into that bracket. And that's not when we see them in the clinic, that's really when we get the clients to think about, you know, when they can first remember the dog starting to gnaw or nibble or scratch, and then they'll go back, oh yeah, actually, you know, the dog was really quite young. If you ask vets who see lots of dogs with atopic dermatitis, they'll tell you that certain breeds will get the disease a lot more commonly than others. We haven't got very good figures on this to support this, but we tend to agree that particularly dogs like dog breeds like West Highland White Terriers, Labrador Retrievers, Golden Retrievers, the German Shepherd, Bull Terriers, Boxers, and
some
Setters.
Some of the usual suspects for all
and also Sharpei, some of the rarer dogs get this disease. This is some geographical difference here, so it depends a bit on which country you're talking about, but this is sort of the European
strains used, probably.
Yeah, absolutely. So The point here is, I guess, that this disease is probably more common in those breeds, but any breed dog or any dog of any breed can actually get atopic dermatitis as well. So the question is, you know, how do we make that diagnosis? There is really no single diagnostic clinical sign or criterion that we can use for this. It's really a diagnosis that relies on a combination of features, as I've just described them, about the history of the problem and how the dog presents on the one side, but also on the exclusion of other diseases that look very similarly on the other side. There are a number of other skin diseases that also cause red and itchy skin in similar sorts of places, and it is quite important that these diseases are investigated and ruled out and or treated as necessary before really making a diagnosis of atopic dermatitis.
So I guess particularly infectious diseases might be difficult,
yeah,
as differential diagnosis, because atopic dermatitis often leads to secondary infections and
absolutely,
then the irritation of the skin is bad enough.
Absolutely. So infections are a huge issue in two ways, in that they can mask atopic dermatitis and you can't really assess what's going on unless you've treated them, but also they contribute to the severity of the disease, so it is an important thing to address, particularly staphylococcal infection, that's a particular type of bacterium, and yeast infections, particularly Malassezia infections, are very common. But even before we look at the infections, what we need to make sure is that these dogs don't have skin parasites, because there are a handful of parasite skin diseases that really can look just like atopic dermatitis. And the beauty of those is that they can be treated. Exactly. You know, that's it. The problem's sorted. Whereas if the dog truly has atopic dermatitis, then of course there isn't a cure. Absolutely. The other thing that needs to be investigated really before going down the line of atopic dermatitis from a treatment point of view is that there are no dietary hypersensitivities. So hypersensitivities to food components, because again these can cause itchy and red skin disease just like atopic dermatitis. And again here the prognosis is a lot better, because when you find out, absolutely, you can modify the diet and you sort the problem. So these are all those things that have to happen and be looked at before we want to make a diagnosis.
Do you use histology to confirm the diagnosis, or is that something which is rather...
No, skin biopsy, skin histopathology is not usually helpful for the diagnosis, with very few exceptions of itchy skin disease at that sort of stage. And as a consequence, we don't tend to use it. The question that's of course asked of us a lot is what role allergy testing plays. And a lot of owners that come to us, and also vets who refer, will assume that one of the first things that we'll do is an allergy test. I have to disappoint there, because we do allergy test, but we tend to do that as a confirmatory test to the diagnosis that we've made on clinical grounds only, or we do that if the treatment that's planned for the dog requires it. An allergy test result on its own does not diagnose atopic dermatitis, and it's very tricky, and there should be a lot of caution with regard to how one interprets the allergy test results. It's not a particularly good test to diagnose the disease. So it would surprise lots of owners and vets how, I guess, little importance we are really attributing to allergy testing these days. Our concept and our idea has somewhat changed there.
So is it ultimately an exclusion diagnosis as well?
It is a diagnosis that's based on typical clinical signs, a combination thereof, and excluding other causes. And that's all we really require. Most of us now will not require positive allergy test results for a diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
For some research projects that is the case, simply because we need to define the dogs immunologically in a way, but really that has not anything to do with the management.
Still, for me as a non-expert, I always was in the belief that the immune system plays a role in this disease. What does actually go wrong in the immune system of these dogs? Are there any other factors which play a role causing atopic dermatitis?
That's a really exciting area that that we need to learn a lot more about, and that we're sort of beginning to learn a lot more about. We tend to look over into what happens in people always, because people get atopic dermatitis, or atopic eczema as it's now called. And in people, obviously, there's a lot more manpower, so a lot more research has happened, so we know a lot more about it, even though there are loads of questions still open. But what seems to be the case there now, that it is acknowledged that human atopic eczema is a very complex multifactorial disease process in which several pathologies play a role. So several things probably happen at the same time in these patients. And one set of things that's wrong with those patients is that most of them have something wrong with their skin barrier. So it's actually about how well the skin barrier works at keeping the outside out, which is probably a prerequisite for the disease, in combination with deviations of the immune response to certain factors. So it's not a simple immune-mediated disease, neither is it just something wrong with the skin barrier. It's probably somewhere in between.
By a skin barrier defect, you mean that those antigens which would be needed to sensitize an immune system which is predisposed to atopic dermatitis, that's one thing you need, but you'd also need basically a skin which is to some extent more permeable than your healthy skin, and therefore those antigens would actually get to the immune system.
Absolutely. This probably explains why most of us who do not suffer from atopic dermatitis can encounter environmental antigens and allergens such as dust mites and pollens without actually ever mounting a response to that and without that causing itchy skin disease, whereas, you know, those of us whose skin barrier is impaired, so it's defective, more permeable, in those individuals, these allergens that normally don't really get, that the immune system normally doesn't actually get to see, that these people will then sensitize to that. So you have to have a certain immunological background, if you like, in combination with an abnormal skin barrier to allow inflammation of the skin and for that to be triggered and perpetuated by environmental factors. So there's a lot of discussion going on in people at the moment as to what's more important. Does the immune defect come first and the skin barrier is a consequence, or is the skin barrier problem the primary issue and the immune deviation is a secondary consequence? And I guess, as usual, the truth is probably somewhere in between, so that the two issues influence each other. You know, where does that leave us with the dog? Well, to be honest, we know very, very little about what happens in dogs. We have assumed for a long time that allergies and immune reactions really are the main thing that's wrong with dogs with atopic dermatitis. But there's so much similarity between the disease in the dog and the disease in people that it is likely that the story isn't that simple. And that we will be looking into skin barrier defect. And there are groups working on this now in the dog as well. And there's a little bit of evidence currently already that suggests that the skin barrier is important in the dog too. So it's a very complex and complicated situation, really.
You mentioned earlier that there are breed predilections, or at least a certain number of breeds, which seem to be affected, based on anecdotal data, more frequently than others, which of course would suggest that there's a genetic component to the predisposition to atopic dermatitis. Is there anything known about that in either the veterinary field or in the human field?
Well, as you say, a strong breed predisposition is really, really suggestive of a huge genetic component. And of course, in people that isn't as obvious, although you can in people look at different populations, I guess, that are ethnically different, that comes closest to breeds and dogs. And that's being carried out at the moment. But obviously to us as vets, you know, different breeds are obviously a clear signpost in here that the genes play a big role. In people, although they don't have breeds, there's been a lot of work already that's gone on about the role of certain genetic defects. And I guess if you had to summarize the findings, is that there's quite a bit of contradiction sometimes. One report will say this gene may be associated with the disease, another report will contradict that. But over and all, there's been a group of genes that have been associated with the disease that have to do with inflammation and immune response. And then there's a second group of genes to do with skin barrier function. We're back to the skin barrier again. There are patients where, you know, they have these genetic changes just in the skin barrier group, and there's some that have them in the skin barrier group as well as the inflammation group. So that again further supports the sort of dual pathogenesis of the disease. And the most striking finding in people, I guess, currently is that a gene that encodes for filaggrin is one of those crucial molecules in the I guess, in the epidermal maturation and epidermal barrier formation.
Probably causing cohesion of the cells.
Well, it's not involved in the cellular cohesion. It's actually involved in the formation of the cortified annular envelope, which is the sort of scaffold of the mature choriocyte, and also in the degree of moisture retention and sort of hydration of the stratocolium to some degree. You know, there are two loss of function mutations in people that are very strongly associated with atopic dermatitis, and it's actually the very gene that is defective in people with the fish scale disease, with one of the forms of fish scale disease, Ichthyosis vulgaris, and they share that abnormality. And it's interesting that a lot of people with Ichthyosis vulgaris have been found to have atopic dermatitis as well. So there's an amazing interaction here between different genetic factors. In the dog, what we know is that it's been demonstrated for golden retrievers and Labrador retrievers in the UK that there's quite a big genetic component of the disease that would support this theory. But in breeding studies, it's not been possible to consistently breed dogs with or without the disease as you would predict it. Probably, again, indicating that, A, this is not a single gene issue, this is a multigenetic problem.
Penetration isn't as high.
Absolutely. Yeah. Also, of course, that there is the gene-environment interaction, which then determines whether or not somebody develops the disease based even on an appropriate genetic background. So it's not as simple as one might like to say that, oh, you can breed this out really easily or breed this, you know, address the problem by breeding practices, not like some other genetic diseases that dogs get. Other than that, we don't really know what the genetic background is in the dog.
Are there any plans of trying to look into this?
Yes, very, very excitingly, there is going to be a big international multicenter study that is sort of coordinated on a European basis, in which atopic dermatitis in the dog is going to be studied in the context of a number of other dog diseases, all of which have similar analogues in people. So there is actually now interest for looking at atopic dermatitis in the dog to help understand the human disease. But of course, what we also want as vets primarily is to understand the disease in the dog better. So there is now a big study that will be kicking off very shortly, whereby there is a focus on the genetic background, the genetic polymorphisms in dogs with atopic dermatitis. And because, of course, in dogs, the dog breeds vary genetically hugely, the strategy has had to be to
try... Especially across the world, even though they look fairly similar,
exactly.
Sometimes they're genetically diverse.
We have restricted ourselves, therefore, to a population of retrievers, golden Labrador retrievers, that are also fairly common. To help sampling. So hopefully over a time scale of about a couple of years we'll manage to get enough sample material to then run a whole range of sophisticated genetic studies on these samples, looking at affected dogs and of course normal dogs for comparison to try and identify where we need to look genetically as to where the problem lies. Hoping, of course, that will give us pointers with a view to treatment and prevention in the future.
Yeah, depending on which type of target genes you identify,
exactly.
They might be targetable by drugs, for example, or point you in another direction. So, but what that also means is that if someone has a golden retriever or a Labrador at home with potentially atopic dermatitis, if they come and find you, they would get an expert workup in the first place and would possibly be included in that study.
Absolutely. What we will do is we will see patients with itchy skin disease and work them up the way you would, and towards a diagnosis of atopic dermatitis. And in the process of the workup, often we find the need to take a blood sample, or we will run an allergy test and we'll take a blood sample for that, or similar sorts of procedures. And what we may ask owners to do with such drugs is to give consent that we can just take a little bit more blood, not a lot, just 1 or 2 milliliters more, that we can then use for those studies. So owners who will, have retrievers affected by itchy skin disease, we'd like to see lots of them come through our door at the Queen Mother Hospital in the next 2 years in particular to help us with that study. But likewise, of course, we only really can draw conclusions about the genetic problems or differences in dogs with the disease if we compare those to normal dogs, retrievers, that do not have a history of itchy skin disease. And so we need blood samples from those as well.
Which is a lot more difficult.
Well, these dogs may have other problems. They may have orthopedic disease, etc., and they may need sampling for other problems. But they need to be skin healthy, if you like, to be eligible. And for that very reason, our normal dog population will be older dogs, senior dogs, 7 years and older, because of course otherwise if you sample a normal 2-year-old, that very dog might actually show signs. Absolutely. So we'd be looking at blood sampling middle-aged to senior, sort of 7 years and above normal dogs in addition to our affected dogs, and hopefully getting lots of samples there. The exciting thing is that this is going to happen in two different countries and three different populations, and with that approach, we're hoping to have enough power in our investigations to actually detect differences. And the genetic investigations themselves will probably take another year or two following the sample collection
before we'll get results.
In the long run, we'll hopefully help. Oh, absolutely, yeah. And in many ways, hunting for genetic polymorphisms underlying the disease is easier in the dog than it is in people, simply because a dog breed is genetically more homogeneous.
More homogeneous, right.
Exactly. So that's, for once, an advantage that the veterinary profession has over the human medical field.
Well, let's hope you can use that. So we've learned already that underlying atopic dermatitis, there on the one hand is the skin barrier defect, which plays a role, and on the other hand there's the immune system. But of course, without the right environmental factors, probably a dog with both defects still wouldn't develop atopic dermatitis. What are the typical environmental conditions under which dogs develop the disease, and could they be easily modified sometimes rather than giving the dog a treatment?
That's of course a really interesting question, simply because we'd obviously love to prevent this rather than having to treat it in the long run. And we don't really have a good answer to that. What we find is that once the disease has developed, it is often maintained and triggered by exposure to environmental antigens such as dust mites and pollens. And that sort of in a way forms the allergic part of the disease. But of course, and so in a dog that would react to those, theoretically, if these triggers could be avoided, you would help them be less affected, and you can make them less itchy by avoiding these things. But practically, of course, pollen antigens and dust mite antigens are really not avoidable unless you dramatically alter the lifestyle of the affected pet. And that's usually neither acceptable nor recommendable from a dog welfare point of view. So what would be great is to understand really whether or not certain environmental exposures in the early life history of those animals, and in fact children, could be modified. And lots of things have been looked at in people in the past, with again contradicting results.
So that's the dirt is good for you.
A few years ago there were recommendations: keep children away from pets, otherwise they become sensitized and develop atopic dermatitis. Now there's some research to suggest, well, stuff them in a house with three cats and it'll protect them from developing atopic dermatitis, etc. So it's not entirely clear, and the question here again probably is timing. At which time point an individual is exposed to what? It's probably dependent on that particular individual's genetic background and various other factors. What is a really interesting area that's being looked at currently is that some of the immune system deviations, or the inappropriate responses, if you like, seem to indicate that these individuals that have those just have a tendency to overreact in that way with the immune system, if you like. And there's a theory here that some of this may have to do with less exposure to certain environmental factors such as bacterial antigens in early life, or for example in people, a lot of use of antibiotics in children seems to make them more likely to react that way. So following that thought through, what is being done currently is prevention studies whereby pregnant mothers are being given certain friendly bacteria to eat that live in the gut, And this is then being continued in children, and to try and see whether or not manifestations of allergic skin disease can be prevented in children that would be predisposed otherwise. And we haven't looked at that in the dog, but that's a really, really interesting field. You know, I would love to set up a study whereby we've got loads of retrieval West Highland White Terrier puppies of different litters, and we'll, you know, randomise them, and some of them, the pregnant bitches, will be fed certain friendly bacteria, and the others won't, and we'll follow those litters into life, and we'll see whether or not we can actually get a protective effect there.
But with the way that litters are usually scattered, it would be logistically quite difficult.
Absolutely. Plus, of course, it's very difficult currently to really suss out what are the right friendly bacteria to use. It's not all of them.
But I guess the human work could possibly give you an indication once that work has been successfully completed as to where to go with the dogs.
Absolutely. Such a study is so difficult to set up that's the reason why it hasn't been done. You know, I'm not the only one who's had that idea. we'd love to do that, but this it's probably slightly premature at this point in time. But I hope we'll get around to doing this sort of thing at some point in the future, because then, of course, what we can do in dogs that have got a high likelihood of developing atopic dermatitis is prevented in the first place. It'll put us veterinary dermatologists out of business, though, but hey.
But we're all clever people and we can adapt to those situations as well, so good luck with that. Well, I guess you gave us a great insight of what atopic dermatitis is and how hopefully in the future we'll understand it better to prevent it or treat it more successfully in dogs. I wish you all the best of luck with your clinical study.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's it from us for this month. And it also is the time for me to say goodbye to our listeners, as I will move on to new shows. But the IVC podcast will remain, and from next month onward, my colleague Dr. Mark Cleesby will be presenting the show. So check out our website again, or sign up on iTunes for more exciting work from the Royal Veterinary College. Goodbye.